Morning. Today's daf in Chulin is Kuf Chaf Ches 128. We are on 127b Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. In a continuation of the Gemara's discussion yesterday, we start with a Mishnah. Yesterday, the Mishnah on Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph at the very bottom of the Amud talked about limbs that were dangling. This is a continuation of a discussion the Gemara had earlier in the Masechta in the fourth Perek, but we're discussing Tuma Tahara and we're discussing the dangling limb as it relates to Inyanei Tuma V'Tahara. And so what we had to do yesterday is we had to hold two thoughts in our head that don't necessarily go together, but they do go together. In other words, the Mishnah put these two thoughts in our head together. If I have Aver or Buster, that's Mududalim Bebehema, I'm just reviewing the Mishnah. So the Mishnah is found on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph. If I have a limb or flesh of the animal, which is hanging by a thread, and I don't mean that literally, but almost literally, meaning whatever the tenuous connection is between the animal and its limb, so now the limb is attached, detached, and the answer is both. Okay, I know it's usually binary, right? It's a simple discussion of it's either attached or it's detached, and as far as the halach is concerned, the answer is yes, that's correct. So, the Mishnah tells us that it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Subject to Tumas Ochlin, meaning that it's considered a food. Now, it's considered a food because it's detached, meaning if it's detached, obviously it's not a food. So it's considered a food, and therefore it's viewed as vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin as if it is, in fact, detached. And it needs Hechsher Bimkoman, meaning, and on top of that, it also, in order for a food to become susceptible to Tumas, we've discussed time and again, it needs to come into contact with one of the seven liquids, which it has to, in order for it to become Tameh. And then, if you take a look at Rashi, on the Mishnah, so Rashi gave us some of the most basic principles. By the way, I did not read the Rashis yesterday, but Nidlash Mimenu Rashi on the Mishnah, Nidlash Mimenu Ever Basa Gidim Vatsamos, oh, Nidlash Mimenu Basa Levado, Vadain Himuranba, Mimixos, Viesh Hefresh, Bain Ever Menachela Basa Menachai, Shever Metame Adam Mikalem, Kinavela, Vabasa Shaino Ever Tar Miklum. Now, it doesn't matter in this discussion, vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, whether it's a limb that was detached or whether it was the meat that was detached, the flesh that was detached. In both cases, the halacha regarding Tumas Ochlin is going to be the same. Rashi notes over here, there's a difference between Tumah Tahara vis-a-vis Eiver Menachai and Bas Menachai. The difference is Eiver Menachai is an Avatumah, and Bas Menachai does not give off an Avatumah, does not self-generate a Tumah, and we're going to be discussing it in today's Daf, God willing. So Rashi, the next Rashi in the Mishnah, Bim Kama Mafa Pishei Muchubarim. Now they're connected. Im Chishev Aleim Lahechilam Lovikochavim. Now Rashi says, look, here's a duality, and we're just going to have to live with this duality. It's still connected, but I could go ahead and I can feed it. Now, who's going to be eating it, by the way, at this point in time? So Rashi over here writes, and Rashi writes this a couple times in our sugya, that you're going to be feeding it to a goy. Now, you're going to be feeding it to a goy, even though it could quite possibly still be Eiver Menachai. But the idea is that it is considered edible food. Remember, when it comes to Tumas Ochlin, don't confuse, like I've done in the past, don't confuse Tumas Ochlin and the actual allowance to eat it. Meaning Tumas Ochlin is at this point in time, is it edible? Is it considered something which could be consumed? So Alphapi, and that's what Rashi's writing over here. Alphapi, Shehin Mechubar, Mimchishev, Alem, La'achilam, Lo'vikochavim, Havi Ochel, L'kabotum, L'tam, Echerim. De Tumas Atzmam, Ein Behem, Achit, L'shu, Kulan, Kiryofin, B'gemara, meaning vis-a-vis its own Tuma, so that's not going to be until it's fully detached. But now that it's given the status of Tumas Ochlin, so now it can become susceptible to Tumah. And the next Rashi, which I'm not going to read right now, talks about the requirement of Hechsher, which of course we know is necessary for Tumas Ochlin. Okay, so that is what we learned back in the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us the halacha that this limb that's hanging, that's dangling, so it's attached and it's detached. It's both. Detachment regarding Tumas Ochlin, but not detachment regarding Tumas Nevela, meaning it's, or Eiver Menachai, meaning it's not considered detached halachically, but at the same time, it is considered detached vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin. Good. That's what we learned in the Mishnah yesterday. Even that in of itself is a lot to wrap our head around. And then the Gemara discusses. Now, we already saw the Braisa yesterday, and we are now in the middle of Kuf Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. We're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. The Gemara quoted a Braisa. I'll back up to the beginning of the Braisa. It's a good launching pad for the Gemara's discussion. Tanya Mihachi. So it's about a quarter of the way down in the Amud. We're starting with the first words in the line are Achi Yipol, and we're starting in the Gemara with the words Tanya Mihachi. We learned in the Braisa. Ha'ivra va'abasa medudalim bebehem amurim bechud ha'sa'ara yachul yitam tumas nevela tamalomer yipol Achi Yipol. So the Braisa teaches us the Yisod that the limb is only going to be considered Eivra Menachai only with full detachment. If there's any connection, afilu kichut hasa'ara, even a hair strand of connection that connects the limb to the animal, to the body, the rest of the body of the animal, so that is going to prevent Eivra Menachai, tumas Eivra Menachai. Now, I know the Braisa uses the word nevela, but in this context, nevela is just simply a substitute word to describe av hatuma. It really means Eivra Menachai. It's not going to be Eivra Menachai until you have full detachment. Good. That's the Braisa. Now, ve'afilo hachi tumas ochlim mitambo. And now the Gemara expresses what I already pointed out in the Mishnah, and this is really what the idea that we have to wrap our head around, and the idea that even though it's attached legabe tumas nevela, tumas Eivra Menachai, but as far as ochlin is concerned, it's considered detached. So it's attached and detached at the same time, just vis-a-vis different halachas. Now the Gemara points out, Misayel al Rav Chia bar Ashi. Now the Gemara says, now we're going to speak about this duality in a number of different ways. The Gemara now is going to be quoting a halacha in the name of Shmuel, which also speaks to this duality of being attached and detached. Te'enim, if I have figs, shitsamku be'iveihem, and the figs now dried, connected to the stem. So in other words, right now the figs are connected to the ground, they are attached by the stem, but it is dried. Metamas tumas ochlin, v'hatosh mem b'shabes chayv chatas. So, on one hand, it's matamatamas ochlin, meaning, are they attached or are they detached? Well, we know, as we already learned before, anything that's connected to the ground, anything which is grounded, is obviously not susceptible to tumah. Can't be mukshar lekabel tumah, and is not susceptible to tumah. Vis-a-vis tumah, if we were to say that they were connected, so they're obviously not going to be matame tumas ochlin. Meanwhile, Shmuel says that they are subject to tumas ochlin. So in the world of Tumas Ochlin, attached or detached? The answer is detached, because now they dried up and basically their connection is shriveled up, even though physically they're attached. So vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, the correct answer is detached. However, Hatos Mem B'Shabbos Chayv Chatas. If I pluck them off the ground on Shabbos, so one would be liable for the Malacha of Kotzer. What is the Malacha of Kotzer? So disconnecting something from that which is connected to the ground. So vis-a-vis the halachas of Shabbos, attached or detached? Attached. And detachment would be a violation of Shabbos. So here we are, we're expressing the same exact duality. On one hand, vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, it's considered detached. Vis-a-vis the halachas of Shabbos, it's considered attached. And how can I hold both thoughts in my head at the same time? So I'm going to have to expand my head a little bit. That's all. So Lema Misayele, the Gemara now is going to bring in a Tosefta that also seemingly is going to support this very idea. And from here until the two dots upcoming, the Gemara is basically going to try to support this idea using other sources as well, meaning the fact remains that we're saying this Pshat in our Mishnah, this duality, regarding Tumas Ochlin, and meanwhile, in other areas of Halacha, it's still considered attached. We said it vis-a-vis the figs connected to the tree on Shabbos, even though it's dried and its connection is withered, but still physically it's attached. Vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, it's considered detached. Vis-a-vis Shabbos, it's considered attached. And the Gemara is just going to try to prove this from other sources as well. Yerakashut Samku B'Yivehem. The Tosefta over here describes a scenario in which you have a vegetable where, again, its connection is dried. It's physically attached, but it is dried. It's withered. Kigona Kruva Adlas. And examples over here of some sort of gourd. Eimetam Tumas Ochlin. So it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin. Kitzitzan V'Yavsha Metam Tumas Ochlin. So if I cut them and I dry them, so then they're going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. As the Tosefta presents itself, it's really difficult to understand. I don't understand. If we are drying them out to the point where they're no longer edible, and basically what we're doing is we're drying it out because we're going to end up using it as some sort of fuel. But in other words, but we're not going to eat it. Well, if it's at the point of inedibility, so then of course it's not going to be subject to Tumas Ochlin. So the Gemara says, okay, so it must be as follows, that when I cut them off, they were currently not in a dried state, meaning right now they are moist and edible, But the plan is right now is, for whatever reason, I don't want to eat them right now. So what we're going to do is that we're going to basically dry them out. And the point of the Tosefta is that even though that's our plan, but as it's currently constituted, it is moist and edible, so therefore it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Now the Gemara over here makes the following observation. So first step is, we just simply said, good pshat in the Tosefta. That's step number one. Now the Gemara says, now let's make a diuk. Time of the Kruva Delasu Kevin Diavshan La B'nei Achila Ninhu. So the Gemara says, we're talking about Kruva Delas, that once it does in fact dry out, so they're no longer edible. Hashar Peros Mitame. And that means that when it comes to other fruits, which are still edible in their dried state, so they're going to be tummy. Now, hechidami idi avshan hein v'uksehen. So the Gemara says, now let's consider. If we're talking about where they were dried out, both the fruit itself and the stems that are attaching them, pshita. So the Gemara says, at that point in time, isn't it obvious that they're not going to be mekabel tuma? So alalav belo uksehem. So the Gemara says, it must be that what is being dried out is just the ukas, just the stem, but not the fruit himself. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. So the Gemara says, no. The truth of the matter is that we're talking about a scenario where the gourd in question in the Tosefta is dried out, both it and its stem. And you ask the question, well, isn't that obvious then that it's not subject to Tumas Ochlin? So the Gemara says, yes, that point might be obvious. And maybe the whole point of the Tosefta was just to make that original point. The Al-Minas Li'av Shem Itzterichle. It's only for that first point that we were interested in. Or I should say better, I'm sorry. What's it called? That's the second point of the Tosefta. But it's only that point that the Tosefta is interested in. That even though we plan on drying it out, nevertheless, if it's currently in an edible state, so then currently it is going to be subject to Tumah. Okay, so the Gemara is basically saying there is nothing to conclude from that case over there, Tashma. The Gemara now considers another brisa. Ilan shenifshach uvo peros. Let's have a tree, the connection between the tree and its fruit started withering out. So again, there is physical attachment, but the connection is basically so tenuous because the stems are dried out. The stems are dried out. So harehin kitulushin. So they are considered as if they are detached. Yavshu harehin kemuchubarim. So the Gemara says, and if they are dried, meaning the fruit themselves are dried, so then harehin kemuchubarim, they're considered as if they are attached. Now, my love, ma tulushin l'chol divrehem, af muchubarim l'chol divrehem. So the Gemara says, now, when we say tulushim and muchubarim, it seems to be binary. It seems to be either they're attached or they're detached, and that's it. And there's nothing more to talk about. So the Gemara says, no, midiriya hakadisa v'hakadisa. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Meaning that when we're talking about where they are dried out, even though we're saying that when they're dried out, they're detached, maybe in terms of detachment, we're only talking about certain areas of halacha. Maybe we're only talking about Tumas Ochlin, but we're not talking about vis-a-vis other areas of halacha. Meaning, maybe Lagabi Shabbos are still considered attached. And the only point the Brisa was making was only regarding Tumas Ochlin. So once again, from this particular Brisa, we don't have any kind of definitive proof whether this is an issue of either it's black and white, it's either attached or detached, or maybe the Brisa is entertaining what we're entertaining, this idea that with a dried attachment, it's going to be in halacha a duality. In Tumas Ochlin, it's going to be considered detached, but in terms of Shabbos, it's still going to be considered attached. Okay. Okay. We are up to now the next part of the Mishnah, and if you take a look back at the Mishnah, again, the Mishnah is the starting point for our discussion. So the first point the Mishnah made is that if I have a dangling limb, so that dangling limb, even though vis-a-vis Nevela, it's still considered attached, but vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, it's considered detached, good. And that's all while the animal's alive. Now the animal dies. Now what do we say about the limb? Well, that's the next part of the Mishnah. And the Mishnah breaks it down to two scenarios, where either the animal dies via Shechita, or the animal dies on its own. We're going to be discussing right now the animal dying via Shechita. So the animal doesn't die. So the animal is killed through Shechita. And now, what is the status of that limb? So the Mishnah presented a machlokus. So I'm going to reread the Mishnah again. The Mishnah is on the top of the Amud. Nishchata behema huchtura bidameha. So when you shech the animal, so the limb is mukshar, is now become susceptible to receive tuma. Bidameha with its blood, with the blood of the animal. Divrei Rebbe Meir, that's the opinion of Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Shimon Omer, Lo Huchshur, and Rebbe Shimon says, it is not Muchshur, Lekabel Tumah, through the blood of the animal. Okay. So at this point in time now, one has to wonder, like, what is going on over here? What exactly is the machlokes between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Shimon? Now, before we start with the Gemara, so let's make some very basic points. The limb right now that was tenuously connected to the animal before Shechita, could it not be that the limb actually gets detached sometime during the Shechita itself? So the assumption the Gemara is making is no, it does not. Meaning, its tenuous connection is there and will maintain there through the Shechita process. Now, when it comes to the animal dying on its own, we're not going to conclude that way. If the animal is dying on its own, so obviously the animal is going to be convulsing during the death process, and there we can make an argument that the limb fell off before the animal actually died, which would then make the limb Eiver Min HaChai. Good. But if we shechted the animal, the assumption the Gemara is making is that that limb was connected during the Shechita process, which means that that limb also received a Shechita as well. And now the question is that this limb now that did receive a Shechita, how does it become Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah? So what we have in our Mishnah is a machlokes between Rav Meir and Rabbi Shimon. Rav Meir says that it simply is Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah through the blood of the animal that was shechted. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, it does not become Mukhshar L'Kabel Tumah. So basically we have a machlokes, and right now we don't fully understand what they're really debating. The Gemara is going to present a number of different ways to explain, to understand this machlokes between Rav Meir and Rabbi Shimon, and I counted. Six to be exact. Six different ways to explain the machlokas. Let's go. Number one. So, b'makam iflegi, the Gemara has asked the question, what exactly is a machlokas? So, our first presentation on Merabah, b'behema nasa yad, le'ever kam iflegi. Can an animal serve as a yad for the limb? Okay, so, let's review what we already know, and that's the idea of yados. The idea of yados is that if something itself is not necessarily susceptible to tumah, but it could serve as a handle for something else, so this in halacha is referred to as a yad. And as a yad, it's going to be conductor, it's going to be conduit of tumah. Now, if you remember, just a short couple of days ago, in our ninth parak of Chulin, so we had the following debate. We know yad is going to be conductor of tumah. That we know. Is yad also going to be a conductor of hechsher? So remember, this was a debate that we had earlier, in terms of whether yad can serve as conduction for hechsher. So let's say the liquid didn't come into contact with the food, but come into contact with the actual handle, with the yad. And can that be a conduit, a conductor of the hechsher required, so that now whatever it's attached to is going to become susceptible to tumah? Good. And that's a machlokas. Right now, let's assume, when I say let's, I mean Rashi sets it up this way. Let's assume right now that yad could serve as a conduction for hechsher. Okay. So, the stage is set now for the following debate. The animal was shechted. Blood is coming out of the neck of the animal. The blood comes into contact with the animal. And now, and also, even before we play it out, here's another really important point to make regarding hechsher. It's such an obvious point, we all know it, but I'm going to articulate it. When we say that a food has to come into contact with a liquid so that it can now become susceptible to tumah, it does not mean that the liquid has to come into contact with every part of the food. If I have an apple and I wash the apple, the water doesn't have to come into contact with every single surface area of the apple. As long as it comes into contact with, now I don't know how much to say, some of it, most of it, right? In other words, I don't know, whatever the correct wording is, it doesn't have to come into contact with all of it. The part of the apple that didn't come into contact with the liquid is also going to be mukhshar, l'kabel tumah. Okay. It's kind of obvious, but I just need to articulate that. Good. Now with all that stated, so now let's consider our scenario. I have an animal with a dangling limb that we just shechted, blood is coming out of the neck of the animal, the blood comes into contact with the body of the animal, and now the rest of the animal is going to be mukhshar l'kabel tumah. But what about that dangling limb? So here now is where it gets interesting. So that dangling limb, let's assume that it is not connected to the animal. It is connected to the animal, but again, a tenuous connection. And we basically are looking at the relationship between the animal and its limb as if it's like a yad. And Rabbi says, now here comes the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. And this is going to be the first of six different ways to explain it. Can we say that the animal is basically going to serve as a yad for the aver? Now, if you think about it, it's a little bit strange. What is a yad? A yad, generally speaking, is something small that allows me to pull the larger item, right? A yad is literally a handle. When you and I think about a handle, so we think about, here's a big item, and here's something where it's connected to, and I just simply pull it, right? The handle of luggage, the handle of a cup, the handle of a pot, So that's generally speaking how we view yad. Here, we're basically going to flip it around. Can the animal serve as a yad for the limb? Now, the animal, obviously, you don't normally, I mean, we're talking about a large animal. You don't normally, hey, you know what? I want to pick up that limb. Oh, so we'll just simply pull on the rest of the animal in order to get that limb. It's not normally how yados work. And Rabbah's saying that's exactly what is at the core debate over here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. And Rashi over here writes, you can't view an animal as a yad towards its limb. The animal can't serve as a handle for that one little limb. And that's why, even though the animal itself, of course, is makshul l'kabel tuma, but it can't serve as a conduction of hechsher to the limb. And of course, on the other hand, Rabbi Meir says, no, we could view the animal as a yad to the limb. And so therefore, conduction of the hechsher goes from the animal to the limb.
Where does Rabbi Meir get that permission?
That's an excellent question. this is now just but one way to present the machlokas. There's no sources. The Gemara doesn't provide sources for this. It's the conceptual debate. Number two. Now, as Rashi points out over here, every one of these has to be set up. So this is not an issue of yad. Meaning, the way Rashi understands Abaye, leave yad out of the discussion right now. The limb and the animal are, in fact, now one entity. Again, its connection is tenuous, but it's one entity. And now the following. What is the definition of one entity? In other words, here we have, I have my tissue box here readily available for a simple illustration. Okay. Now, when I pull on this box itself, so obviously the tissues are going to go together with it. If, however, I pull on one of the tissues, so the box is not going to come along. So is this considered one entity, the tissues and the box? So the answer clearly is no. Clearly. Okay, but at the same time, however, we understand that the way this was constructed, they were meant to be served as two entities. But basically, with the pulling of one and the other one doesn't come along with it, can we view that in halacha as one singular entity? Or by definition, do we have to view that as two entities? And what Abaye now is explaining is as follows. Look, the connection between the leg and the limb and the animal is so tenuous. If I pull on the animal, probably the limb's going to come along for the ride. I know, there's a lot of variables. How hard do I pull? Do I jerk it? I get it. But in other words, but probably the limb's going to come along for the ride. If I pull on the limb, am I going to get the animal to come along with it? And the answer is probably no. It's going to snap. So when I have this scenario where if I pull on the larger piece, the smaller piece is going to come along with it. But if I pull on the smaller piece, the larger piece is not going to come along with it. Do we view this halakhically as one entity or as two entities? I'll give you a wonderful example of where this may play out in halacha. And that is, you know, what's it called? I have this, unfortunately, come up all the time. So the pitum starts to fall off the esrog. So now there's a tenuous connection between pitum and esrog. And is it halachically viewed as one entity, or are they now two separate entities? And again, I'm just speaking out loud. I'm thinking out loud. This is not a halachic discussion. But just in terms of conceptualizing. Well, if I pick up the esrog, well, the pitum will certainly go along with it. If I pick up the pitum, probably the esrog will not come along with it. And again, I know that they're variables. It depends how tenuously they're connected, how hard I jerk it. I get it. But that's the basic idea, and this is how Abaye explains the machlokas. So Abaye amar ba'ochis b'katan vein gadon ola imo kemifligi. Mar sefer ochis b'katan vein gadon ola imo harehu kamohu. Umar Savar in Kamahu. And this is exactly the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir. Whereas Rabbi Meir takes the position that the limb is going to be Mukshal Kabal Tama, because if I can drag the animal, the limb's going to come along with it. Now, even though if I drag the limb, it's going to just snap right off, but Rabbi Meir says that's enough to be viewed as one entity. And Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, says, no, it's not. In order for it to be viewed as one entity, there has to be connection, even if I pull on the small to drag the large. Now Rav Yochanan, so I put him down in my Gemara as 2A, meaning he's in total agreement with Abaye. This is the right way to understand the machlokas. The Rabbi Yochanan, Rami, the Rameir, because consider now what seems to be a stereo between the Shitas Rameir, Miyama Rameir, Ochas, because the main Gadola, Imo, Harehu, Kamohu, Veriminu. The Gemara now challenges based on the following Ochel, Shinifras, Umo, Urabimixas. Let's say I have a food. And along comes a Tful Yom and touches the tenuously connected food. So, and again, we're going to view the food as there's a large piece and there's a small piece. So here comes our Tful Yom who has residual tuma, and he's going to be touching one of the pieces. And Rabbi Meir Omer im ochez bekatan v'gado ola imo hareu kamo v'imlav eno kamohu. So here Rabbi Meir says that if you are holding the small piece, but the large piece does not come along with it. So, harehu. I just realized. Good. If you hold the small piece and the large piece comes along for the ride, so harehu kamohu. V'imlav enu kamohu. So, Rameir over here writes, we see if I can drag the small piece and large piece comes along together with it, then and only then is it considered one unit, one entity. Okay. Now, that's great, meaning we are discussing our very issue. Here's what's not great. Rav Meir in the Brice that we just cited is the exact opposite of what we learned in our Mishnah regarding the tenuously connected limb to the animal. And so it's exactly the opposite, meaning the argument is the same, but the argument is just simply reversed. V'amar Rav Yochanan Muchlefes Hashitas, Rav Yochanan, and again, if I can log in the number of times that Rav Yochanan says this throughout Shas, it is a pretty popular refrain of Rav Yochanan when faced with these kinds of issues. All right, so we're going to have to flip around one of the brises, whichever one. Probably we're going to flip around the brise that we just learned as opposed to flipping around a Mishnah. But in any event, meaning what the point of the Gemara is that Rav Yochanan views the issue to be the same issue, and in order to make sure that Rav Meir is aligned, so therefore we're going to flip around the sheet of Rav Meir. So the Gemara now gets very technical over here for just a moment. Am I kushya? Dilmashani lele Rav Meir ben Tful Yom l'shar tumos. So the Gemara says, well, can we make a distinction? We're only talking about a Tful Yom over here. And when we're talking about a Tful Yom, so his tuma is a residual tuma. It's a lighter tuma. And so can we make such a distinction that we're only talking about a Tful Yom? So Tanya, Rebbe Omer Echad Tful Yom ve'Echad Shar Tumos. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Rebbe taught us that it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a residual tuma or whether we're talking about any other type of tuma. There is no distinction to be made. V'dema l'Rebbe lo shani lei l'Rebbe Meir shani lei. So the Gemara says, okay, Rebbe does not think there's a difference, but maybe Rebbe Meir does. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right, but as far as Rav Yochanan switching around the shitas are concerned, so let's assume that he subscribes to Rebbe's position, which is that it doesn't matter whether it's Tful Yom or any other type of tuma, in any event. So the only time I view them as unified is only if I can pull the smaller piece and the larger piece comes along with it. That is the opposite of what Rav Meir said in our Mishnah, which led to Rav Yochanan saying, Muchlefes HaShita, we got to switch around the shitas. Anyway, point of all that is that Rav Yochanan agrees with Abaye that the core issue of our Mishnah, it's not a yad discussion, it's just, do I view the tenuously connected limb as part of the animal? If I pull the animal, the limb's going to come along with it. If I pull the limb, the animal's not going to come along with it. And in halacha, is that viewed as one entity or as two separate entities? And that's the machlokes between Rav Meir and Rabbi Shimon. We are up to now the third possible way of explaining the machlokes. This is Rava. So just in terms of Misora, we started with Rabba, we went to Abaye with the 2A of Rav Yochanan, and now we're going to Rava. Rava Amar be Yesh Yad L'Tumah ve'en Yad L'Hechsher k'mifligim marasav Yesh Yad L'Tumah ve'en Yad L'Hechsher marasav Yesh Yad L'Tumah u'L'Hechsher. Rava's explanation over here goes back to what we said at the beginning of the whole sugya, meaning we're going to now view the tenuously connected limb as a yad, the animal is going to be serving as a yad to the animal, and let's assume that it does in fact serve as a yad to the animal serves as a yad to the limb. Let's assume that that's true. Over here, when we're talking about conduction, we know that a yad serves as a conductor of tumah. That's a given. That is a clear and true halacha that we said since the beginning of this perek. Over here, possibly what's under debate over here is, does the yad also serve as conduction to hechsher? Now remember earlier we had a machlokas on that very point. Rava now is suggesting that's exactly the debate in our Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that the limb is now susceptible to tumah because he views the yad not only as a conduction of tumah, but he also views yad as a conduction of hechsher. Ma she'enkin, according to Rabbi Shimon, no, yad is only a conduction of tumah, not a conduction of hechsher. Number four, a fourth explanation of the machlokas. Rav Papa Amar behechsher kodem machshava kemiflugi. Rav Papa says that the issue over here is as follows. In order for a food to become susceptible to tumah, so there has to be a machshava. Remember the Rashi I read in the beginning of Shir today? That when I have this tenuously connected limb, the reason why it is now tumas ochlin is because we think at this point in time we're going to feed it to a guy. Okay. Now after we shecht it, so now there is a new machshava taking place. What's this new machshava taking place? So now it can be eaten by a Jew. So Rav Papa Amar behechsher kodem machshava kemiflugi. Did not Amar Rav Yehuda kachaya Rabbi Kiva shona chelav shchuta bekfarim tzarech machshava ve'ein tzarech hechsher shekvar hochsher b'shchita. So we're talking about chelav of the kfarim. Now Rashi over here points out the chelav of the kfarim. What is the nature of chelav in the kfarim? Rashi writes. Rashi offers a second pshat, but I'll just explain the first pshat of Rashi. You know, in the villages, so they don't need to eat chalev. So they basically look at chalev and they're like, look, there's not a lot of us here over here. We just shechted an animal. So we're not. So there's no need for us to eat the chalev. So they don't view chalev as food. In the cities where resources are limited, people are a lot, so everyone thinks and considers that they're going to eat the chalev. And by the way, we're talking about chalev. Either we could be talking about the chalev of a behema, but we're talking about the population being non-Jewish, which again means it's going to be an ochel, or we could be talking about the chalev of a chaya. Again, we're talking about Tumas Ochlin over here. So the point is that is it viewed as edible or is it not viewed as edible? That's the only real question to ask regarding Tumas Ochlin. In the villages, the chalev of the animal is not typically eaten. It's not traditionally eaten. It's not viewed as an ochel. So let's say that we have the chalev of a shechted animal, and we are in the kfarim, and we're in the villages where it's not normally viewed as food. Tzarech mashava ein tzarech hechsher. So it already came into contact with a liquid, but when we originally shechted the animal, we weren't thinking about eating it. And then afterwards, you know what? We said to ourselves, you know, today we're going to eat chalev. Okay, whatever. In other words, we had a machshava now to eat it. Does it require a new hechsher? Meaning, nothing changed physically. The only thing that changed is our attitude and our mental state regarding it. And does hechsher have to occur specifically after we considered eating it? Or can we just simply say, look, it came into contact with the liquid already, and we can have the machshava afterwards? And what Rav Papa now is suggesting, this is exactly the machlokas. Well, first, let's see it together in this brisa. I'm Rabbi Huda Kachaya, Rabbi Kiva Shona. So, chelev shchuta bekfarim tzarech machshav v'vein tzarech hechsher. Shekvar huchsher b'shchita. So, the first position of Rabbi Kiva was, it doesn't require a new hechsher. Now, Amar telefon of lemaraten Rabbeinu Olshin shelikta v'hidichon lebehema. Let's say we have the Olshin, right? Some sort of endive. Some sort of vegetable that's typically viewed as animal food. And not viewed as human, as humans going to consume it. And meanwhile, it came into contact with the liquid, and then afterwards, nimlach aleim la'adam. And then we decided, you know what? Normally this is animal food, and normally we're not going to eat it. Today we're going to eat it. So we now have a machshava that we're going to eat it. So tzrichin hechsher sheni. So now that we have rendered it food, even though, again, physically nothing changed, the only thing that changed was our attitude, hechsher is required after the attitudinal change. That is what we learned regarding these endives. Same thing should be true over here. If the chalev is traditionally not eaten, and then after the animal was shechted, we decide to eat it, it's going to require a new hechsher. The Chazer Rabbi Kiva Le'yoshona, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Kiva said, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. It's going to require a new hechsher. So, we have two opinions of Rabbi Kiva. I know that sounds funny, but it's true. We have two opinions of Rabbi Akiva. We have his original position, and now we have his conclusive position, his concluded position. So, Mar Stavalaki Mekara, Mar Stavalaki Chazara. And that's exactly what's going on over here. When I have this tenuously connected limb of an that's connected to an animal, we shechted the animal. Does the limb require require a new hechsher. So again, this is according to Rav Papa, this is the issue of, well, it was already came into contact with a liquid, but before we considered eating it. But now that we considered eating it, we have a machshava post-hechsher. Does a machshava post-hechsher require a new hechsher? Rabbi Kiva originally thought no, and then Rabbi Kiva said, you know what? It does. And those are reflective of the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. Our fifth understanding of the machlokus between these Tanayim. Rav Acha bar Rav Ika amar b'niskanech adam bein simon l'simon kemiflegi. Blood starts spurting out at the beginning of the Shechita. That's Dam HaNefesh. That's Dam HaNefesh, which is also going to be a Machshir. Take a look at Rashi. B'nizkanech HaDam. Dekule Amma Ein Yad LaHechsher. Aval Yesh Yad LaTuma. So right now we're setting it up where there is the Yad, the relationship between the limb and the animal is a Yad. And a Yad is not serving as a conduction for Hechsher. Uplutai B'shenitas HaDam Al HaEver V'kinchu Ben Simon L'Simon. Now, some blood did spurt on, but the blood that spurt on only came out from the first part of the Shechita, not the second half of the Shechita. Now, Mar Sava Yeshna Shechita Mitchil V'Yatzofe Hai Dam Shechita Hu, Umar Sava Einel Shechita Ela Sofa Hai Dam Makahu. And over here, we get on to a machlokus that we saw in the beginning of the Masechta, and we're revisiting now towards the end of the Masechta. When I shecht an animal, we all understand and agree that the Shechita process requires me to take the knife and to go back and forth until I get to the majority of both the trachea and the esophagus. That's a given. The discussion over here, the debate over here, is a halachic debate regarding what is considered the Maisa Shechita. Is it every single moment that I'm cutting through that is considered a Maisa Shechita, and therefore the blood that comes out is what's called Dam Shechita? Or maybe no. Maybe, as far as what Shechita is concerned, what is halachically described as Shechita is Einu L'Shechita Ela B'Sof. Shechita is only halachically at the end. Everything prior to that, we'll call that Hechsher Shechita. In other words, it's the obviously preparatory stage that we need in order for Shechita to occur, but it's not Shechita, it's not halachically Shechita. It doesn't have the status of Shechita. And therefore, the blood that comes out of that is not Dam HaShechita. If it's not Dam HaShechita, what are we going to call that? So let's give it a new name. Let's call it Dam Makah, right? It's blood of a wound. We know that Dam is a Machshir, but not every Dam is going to be a Machshir. Only Dam Shechita, Dam HaNefesh is going to be a Machshir. But the Dam Makah is not going to be a Machshir. And so what the Gemara now is suggesting is that this very well may be the Machlokus. The blood that's spurred on the limb of the animal, the tenuously connected limb of the animal, is only coming from the first half of the Shechita, which is debatable whether or not that's considered Dam Shechita or just simply Dam Makah. Okay. Number six. Our sixth way of explaining the Machlok Jum Rameh and Rabbi Shimon, Rav Ashi Amar B'Shechita, Machsheres, V'lo Dam Kemiflegi. The Gemara says it really succinctly, takes a little bit of explanation. Rashi points out as follows. Everyone's of the opinion that Yad is serving as a conduction for Hechsher. V'hai Aver Isle Yad de Behemanas, I'm sorry. And we could say that the animal is going to be serving as a conduction, as a yad for the limb. Everyone's going to hold like that. Or we can go back to a point that we made earlier. Even though if I pull on the limb, it'll detach, but if I pull on the animal, it'll attach. Meaning, the limb and the body are considered one unit, either through the concept of yados, or just simply because they are viewed as one entity, as we discussed in the beginning of this morning's daf. Ukishinitas Adam al Aver Velonis Kanech Kamiflegi. Rameir Savar Dam Machshir Vare Hochshir. Now, as far as Rameir is concerned, Dam is a Machshir. And so, therefore, the blood spurting on the animal, it serves as a Hechshir. Rabbi Shimon Latame Dam Rabbi Perksheni. Now, we go back a long time ago in the Masechta to Daf Lamed Vav. And Rashi reminds us of Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint back there. Shechita machsheres v'lo dam. No, Shechita is not going to be a machsher. Sorry. Shechita is a machsher. The blood is not going to be a machsher. V'hai ever kevin de la mahanyule shechita lehatira ba'achila. And so now, our tenuously connected limb. So even though it's not going to be a nevela, it's not going to be Aver Menachai, but at the same time, we're not allowed to eat it through the Shechita. According to Rabbi Shimon, Shechita is serving as the Machshir and not the blood. So whatever is permissible to be eaten through the Shechita, That and only that is going to be mukshal kabel tuma. The limb is not going to be mukshal kabel tuma because the limb, according to Rabbi Shimon, is not going to be neater through the shechita, therefore not going to be mukshar through the shechita. Alpha gav de mahanyle latari mide nevela. Now, again, we're going to have to just hold two thoughts in our head at the same time. The shechita vis-a-vis the limb is going to be effective in that the limb is not going to be a nevela, lo makshere latuma. But still, it's not going to give it the hechsher tuma. The time of the shechita makshere is hainu mishum, the kevin the mishavile uchla inyan heter achila, mishavile nami uchla inyan tuma. Because as far as what is providing hechsher from Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, that which is providing hechsher is the act of shechita, and that which shechita allows to be eaten. Shechita is not allowing me to eat the limb, the tenuously connected limb. It is removing the tumas nevela from it, and it's not going to be Avram and Achai, but it's not going to allow consumption, and therefore it's not going to be machshir. And this is our third. This is our sixth explanation of the machlokas. So here's what we know, and here's where it gets. It's just a little bit complicated, not so bad. What we know is that Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon say that when I shecht an animal with a tenuously connected limb, is that limb now already going to be considered mukshal kabel tuma? So we know, the Mishnah told us that, according to Rabbi Meir, it is mukshal lekabel tuma. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's not going to be mukshal lekabel tuma. Now, what is behind that machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon? So all you need to do is just review the last Amud of Gemara that we did, where the Gemara presents six different ways to analyze the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. By Rava. The Gemara now is going to be asking basically the same question repeatedly. And it's a wonderful question. And basically, if the yad itself is impervious to tuma, can it still serve as a yad? Okay? We've asked numerous forms of this question earlier as well. But the Gemara now is using our discussion as a springboard to discuss this very topic. By Rabbi Behema Bechaya Mashutas Yad La'Aver. So, look, we have our tenuously connected limb. We know that it's subject to Tumas Ochlin in its current state, even while the animal's alive. That we all know. We also just finished a discussion in the Gemara, and you remember, by the way, Rabbi is one of the presenters of the answer, of whether or not there's Yad L'Tumah, whether there's Yad L'Tumah and Yad L'Hechsher, is there only a Yad for Tumah but not for Hechsher? Good. That was Rabbah that we learned just about 20 lines above where we are right now. Rabbah asked the following question. So the limb in its current state, being tenuously connected to a live animal, is subject to Tumas Ochlin. If I were to take a sheriff's and touch it to that limb now is subject to Tumas Ochlin. We all know that. Here's the part that Rabbah says, I'm wondering, and I'm wondering out loud. While the animal's alive, let's say that the animal is in fact going to be considered a yad towards the limb. But while the animal's alive, we all know that the animal is not susceptible to tumah. It's a live animal. Live animals are not susceptible to tumah. Can our live animal that's not susceptible to tumah serve as a conduction of tumah? Can it be a conduit, even though it itself cannot become tumah? Good. Question on the table. The Gemara is leaving this question unresolved. Amar Abai Hare Amru.
The should bring the tumah to the behemah.
The behemah should be bringing the tumah to the aver.
The behemah was never tumah.
We're looking at it as a yad. Were you looking at just simply as conduction of tumah?
So the conduction has got to go from
aver. The aver hamadildal is now subject to tumas ochlin. If a sheretz were to touch it directly, it will become tumah. Good. Agreed. Now, what if the sheretz touches our behemah?
It's nothing.
Well, the behemah is nothing. Can it be a yad for the aver?
How could you be a yad if you yourself are not tumah?
Good. Good. That's Rabbah's question. And if we may, we learned earlier that a yad itself doesn't necessarily have to become susceptible to tumah. Right, the handle itself, the hide that I'm pulling off of the animal, I'm going back to a sugya that we did earlier. The handle in which I'm pulling off of the animal, the hide itself, as long as it's unprocessed, is not mekabel tumah.
If the animal itself is the ikar, how could it be a yad?
Again, that goes back to what we discussed in the beginning of the sugya.
The dog wagging.
Okay, fine.
Depends which part of the animal that actually.
Okay, so that's question number one, and the Gemara is now going to do this in many different formats in terms of just asking this very same question of the something itself is not susceptible to tuma, but can it be a yad for that which is connected to in order to be a conduction of that tuma? Gemara over here has such a wonderful debate in the following scenario. I have a vegetable planted in the pot and cucumbers, and it's not perforated. There's no perforations over here, so we're assuming right now that there's no unika from the plot, from the pot to the ground. And we know the halacha is that when something is grounded, it is no longer subject to tumah. So if, let's say, for example, I had a fruit or vegetable that was tummy, but I put it into the ground, so it's now at that point in time no longer going to be subject to tumah. What if I have my perforated pot, kisha shenata ba'atzitz, and I plant it in a pot, but not in the ground, vihigdil, and it starts to grow. Eviyatza chutza atzitz. And now, going back to my tissue box, one of the cucumbers now goes over the side of the pot and now is directly in line with the ground. We know, we say this all the time in halacha, in terms of yinika, in terms of nourishment is concerned, air is not going to be an impediment in terms of it receiving nourishment from the ground. And so therefore now this part that's outside is mechubla karka. And now this side outside is mechubla karka. What about the rest of the cucumber that's not directly over the ground? So that's subject to a machlokas. Just give me a moment. So, v'yatza chutz la'atzitz tahora. So, I'm sorry. Kisha shenata ba'atzitz v'yigdil v'yatza chutz la'atzitz tahora. So, according to the Tanakama, everything is tahor, both the part that's out and even the part that's in. I'm Rabbi Shimon v'chimativ alatayir alatame b'tumaso v'tar b'tumaso. So, and Rabbi Shimon says, nope, the part that's directly over the ground, that is going to be tahor, because this is going to be considered grounded. Anything in the pot itself is not connected to the ground, and therefore not going to be tahor. So we have an unusual circumstance where I have a cucumber, half of it's tahor, and the other half is susceptible to tumah, or tummy. Yes, Ben.
My question is that if the cucumber is rooted in the pot, how could it get nourishment through its fruit when it's hanging over? Is nourishment through the root that's...
Again, the halacha views as something directly over the ground as it's receiving nourishment from the ground. That's the way halacha views it. By abaye, maushitasi yad lechaverta teku. And so now with this in mind, so now the part that's directly, and we're within the position of Rabbi Shimon, the part that's directly over the ground is now tahor. So good, so it's no longer susceptible to tumah. But can it serve as a yad for the part that is not over the ground? It's the same question. Something that it itself is not subject to tumah, but can at least be a yad and a conduction for something that is susceptible to tumah. Am Rabbi Yirmiyahu Hare Amru Hamishtach V'Lachatzi D'Las Asra. The Gemara is going to be asking the same question. The Gemara is basically right now asking this, repeatedly the same question, but at the same time, however, the Gemara is wonderfully like reminding us of so many different halachas and areas in halacha, like things we should know, but you know, just with the constant repetition and the review, so we're going to get down. Let's say a person bows down to not the full gourd. For some reason, he doesn't deify the entire gourd. He's only interested in the part that's facing him. And with Avodah Zarah, it's hard to talk about it intelligently. But again, we don't have a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah anymore. So, you know, from our standpoint, like all this seems weird. But he's bowing down only to half of the gourd, making now only half of it subject to Tashmishei Avodah Zarah. Not Tashmishei, but actually Avodah Zarah itself. Now, we know that anything that has the status of Avodah Zarah is Asar Ba'achila and Asar Ba'ana. Now, when something is Asar Ba'ana, so vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, it's zero, meaning you're not allowed to get benefit from it. It's an Isser Minatorah to get benefit from it, and so therefore it has no status as Tumas Ochlin. And now that part's going to be Asar and no longer subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay, good, but there's the other half of the gourd. The other half of the gourd is not been worshipped and not given the status of Avodah Zarah, and here we go asking the exact same question.
What breaks up the gourd into pieces?
It's one of the assumptions. It's a given.
There's like no demarcation. There's no between one after the other.
Okay, I hear you, but it's
one unit.
Agree.
How do you divide it like that?
I don't know. Okay, that's right now my best answer, which is not a good one, but it's what I got. By Rav Yirmiyah, Maushitasi Yad Lechaverta. And again, the Gemara's question is going to be the same question. Can something which it in of itself is not going to be susceptible to Tumah, but it can be a conduction of Tumah? So, Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Amar Papa. Sorry. Yeah. Amar Papa.
Not.
Correct.
The question is, which one is the Yad Tumah?
No, that's not the question. We know. We're trying to see whether or not the part that is, which is Takrovis of Odezara, again, I keep. It's not even Takrovis. It's Mamish Avodah Zarah. Can that part now at least be a Yad? It's not going to be Mekabel Tumah, because it's Asar Ba'achila, it's Asar Ba'anah, it's not Ochlin, it's not going to be Avodah Zarah, but can it at least be a Yad? Teku? Questions unresolved. Amra Papa Hari Amru Yichur Shel Te'ena Shenifshach Umu'ur B'Klipasa. So Rabbi Yehuda Matar V'Chachamim Omrim Im Yachol Lachayos Tawar V'Im Lav Tameh. So, if I have a stem of a fig that dries up, but it's still connected, so Rav Yehuda, Umura Beklipasa, but it's still connected in its shell. So Rav Yehuda Matar V'Chachamim Omrim Im Yachol Lachayos Tawar V'Im Lav Tameh. And so now, even though I have a fig that is still connected to the tree, but if it no longer has regenerative properties, so it's going to now be susceptible to Tumah. So, by Rav Papa, Maushi Yase Yad Lechavero. Now, Rashi over here offers a couple of explanations. I'm going to go with Rashi's second explanation, although even the second explanation is a little bit difficult, but in any event, the basic idea is as follows. It's the same question. Meaning, the tree that's planted in the ground obviously is impervious to Tumah. It's grounded. But now, this stem and fig that are connected to it are dried, no regenerative property, subject to Tumas Ochlin. Can the tree at least serve as a yad towards the fruit? The tree itself obviously cannot become tamei, but can at least serve as a yad. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Okay. Amar Rabbi Zera Hari Amru Evan Sheb is Zavios Kishu Choletz Es Kulo Ukishu Notates Es Shelo Umeniach Es Shel Chaveiro. You have, all right, we have not perfect agreement, actually. This week is Tazria. Next week is Mitzara. Right? This week is not Tumas. Last week was Shmini. Last week was Tumah, but anyway, Tumas Batim is coming up in next week's Parsha. Okay. So, but anyway, but the point is still going to be good. When you have Tumah of the house, so the stones have to be removed. We are discussing a cornerstone right now, and a cornerstone is generally, back in the day, they lived in townhouses. I mean, we still do nowadays as well. But in other words, a cornerstone was basically a stone that serviced two different houses. And so now, in the event that there needs to be a removal of the stone, right, under certain circumstances, you'll go through next week's Parsha. We'll all go through it, God willing. And we'll see, and under certain circumstances, there's going to be an etitzas ha'evan, a removal of the stone. So a chalitzas ha'evan, I should say. And what do I do with the chalitzas ha'evan that's a cornerstone? So that's what we're learning together in our Mishnah in Negayim. Evan Shabazavis Kishu Choletz Es Kulo Ukishu Notates Es Shelo. So when we're doing Chalitza, we remove the whole thing. If we just simply have to scrape away, we only scrape away at our section, not at the other section. Umeniach Es Shel Chaveiro. Now, by Rabbi Zera Maushitasi Yala Chaverta. And once again, here we go, asking basically the same question. The part of the stone that is not subject to Tumas Saras, to Tumas Batim, but can at least serve as a handle, as a yad, to the part that is subject to Tumas Negayim. Again, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. And I guess that the point is that so many different examples of speaking to the same idea, the Gemara must have had thoughts and reasons why it is that one is not necessarily connected to the other. Let's quickly recap our morning. We discussed today, we finished off yesterday's discussion about this duality of something being connected but disconnected at the same time. Vis-a-vis Tumas Ochlin, our tenuously connected limb, the branch which is dried up. So even though halachically they are considered disconnected regarding Tumas Ochlin, but regarding Avram and Achai, it's still considered connected. Regarding Shabbos and the ketzitza and the cutting off of the limb, it's still considered connected. So just we dealt with the duality of something being halachically both connected and disconnected at the same time. We spoke out, most of our daf today dedicated itself to the machlokas of the Mishnah between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir. When I have a tenuously connected limb and we shecht the animal, what is the status of the limb vis-a-vis hechsher? Does it require hechsher, yes or no? Machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. 6 different ways to explain the machlokas. And then the Gemara asks a series of questions where, and it started with Rabbah. Rabbah wanted to know, when the animal's alive, it's not going to be makabel tuma, that's a given, can it at least serve as a yad for the tenuous limb, which is going to be makabel tuma sochlin? So he leaves the question unresolved, and as long as we ask that question, the Gemara followed up with a handful of other questions, which all basically thematically are the same. Can one item which is not going to be makabel tuma, can it at least be serving as a yad for that which is going to be makabel tuma?